Welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast, hosted by Dr. Becca Tagg. We support clinicians who have been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug, looking to strengthen their practice to better serve their clients, employees, and themselves.
Hello, and welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Tagg, and today is session 59. Lately, I've gotten a bunch of questions about our training program at Del Mar Center for Behavioral Health, and so I thought I would answer a couple of the questions and kind of talk a little bit about what our training program looks like. I should start by being specific that this is our training program for students who are graduate students of behavior analysis that are hoping to learn and accrue hours to be eligible to sit for the BCBA exam. We have a variety of different trainees at our organization, and today I'm specifically talking about our prep program for those who are hoping to become BCBAs. So our training program is based off of my training as a clinical psychologist. So for those of you that aren't clinical psychologists, a brief review of that is in my doctoral program. So it's typically a 5-ish year course of study where you have didactic, right? So that classwork piece, but then you also engage in a variety of different applied experiences. So you spend some time as a research assistant, and then maybe you spend some time doing senior behavioral health or neuropsychology or intensive outpatient or working with schools or psychological testing. And so you go through these varieties of practica that give you experience in applying the psychological skills and techniques that you're learning with a variety of populations, right? Because we know that multiple exemplars helps to move towards mastery, right? So when I can apply active listening skills with older adults and children and in the business setting and in couples therapy or family therapy or with a variety of different populations, then it's more likely that I'm mastering this skill, not that I've only learned to apply it with one specific subset or in one specific context, right? So that is one of my fears for behavior analysis, is that students are learning about applied behavior analysis, but really just in the context of working with individuals with ASD and developmental disabilities. And while I think that's super valuable, as it's how I spend a large chunk of my time, I also think that it's a very narrow application of our science. And so when we can understand our science as a whole or understand our science with more global applications, then my hope is that we are gaining greater mastery over our science, not just its application with one specific population. That said, it certainly does not mean that participating in clinical rotations or doing one or two things where you're applying behavior analysis to a wider population means that you are ready and able to go apply behavior analysis with a variety of different populations or in different settings. Of course, we want to go back to our code, which indicates that we need to have adequate education and supervised practice in order to apply our science to a new population. So this does not trump that. And I do think that the way we are training behavior analysts is positive. So again, it's modeled after my training as a clinical psychologist, where we had a variety of different experiences that helped me and my colleagues to better learn our science, right? The science of psychology. So we take that piece and overlay that onto what some of you guys might be familiar with is the Little Star ABA's apprenticeship model. So where, at least for us, advanced standing students get a position that is essentially a salaried position, and they spend a chunk of their time doing direct work, and then a chunk of their time, when I say direct work, one-to-one intervention with individuals with ASD, And then they spend a chunk of their time doing other activities that are not billable, right? So it doesn't bring money into the company directly, but it does provide them with really a wealth of opportunities to learn about what their jobs will be like as BCBAs and to learn, I hope, greater application of our science. So when an individual applies for, so they apply for these positions because there are more students, more people who are interested in this position than positions, because of course, as a business, there has to be more coming in than going out. And so it is a limited number of slots or positions. So there is an application process. And once selected, people move into what we call a full-time apprenticeship, where you're with us full-time. Again, it's that salaried position. And there's some direct or billable clinical work, and then there's other activities. I could probably do another podcast session about the other activities, but today what I'm going to talk about is specifically our clinical rotation. The clinical rotations are different complementary areas that when a person learns about may help them be a stronger behavior analyst. So the content is typically selected from areas that I've seen as areas of deficit in new BCBAs over the last 10 years as we bring aboard new BCBAs. These tend to be areas that either people haven't had enough practice in to really hit the ground running and be at a place to start being more independent as a BCBA. Of course, never completely independent, but to be able to manage caseloads more independently and be successful with colleagues, supervisees, parents, superiors. There really are some behaviors that need to be more mastered than perhaps what I've seen. So one of those areas is school consultation and working with schools where during our clinical rotation, they're anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. And it's a small group that meets together weekly for an hour to an hour and a half. And it goes through, or they go through, a structured sort of curriculum about these different areas. So to apply that to the school clinical rotation, the students learn about IDEA and Americans with Disabilities Act and special education in our state of North Carolina, as well as federally. We take a look at different IEPs. We talk about testing. We talk about consultation, the difference between educational and sort of, so the educational setting services and then our medical center services. And so through this rotation, our students are learning more about how to best support the families that they're working with, because nobody exists in a vacuum, right? We are all a part of a variety of different contexts. And to be able to best support an individual, we have to have some understanding of the different contexts within which they're operating. So our students, or our learners, our kiddos, our primary patients, they go to school. So that's one context. They come to the clinic. That's another one. They're a member of their family. They're a member of a different community. And so when we better understand those different systems and the different contingencies at play in those systems, I believe we're better able to support that family. So working with schools and understanding how school systems work and educational settings is one of our clinical rotations that, again, through better understanding that context, both the legal piece, the systems piece, hopefully that helps our BCBAs better support the families we serve because they know more about the different contexts. Another rotation that we do is occupational therapy. We've been fortunate to connect with different OTs and then also OT BCBA Amy McGinnis Stango, who's also been on the podcast, who has put together and provided and pointed us in the direction of some different materials to better understand occupational therapy, right? And so again, a different context. So when we better understand the complementary fields that are also working with the clients that we serve, we may be better equipped to support our families. This doesn't mean that we necessarily co-treat with OTs, because most of our funding sources specifically say that's not permitted. It does mean, I hope, that we're better aware of our own scope of practice and competence, because I understand their scope of practice and competence. And I understand better what occupational therapy is and what it isn't. And when I understand that better and have an appreciation for what that is and what it isn't, I may be better able to consult with or interact with occupational therapists. We have another one for speech therapy. Again, to better understand speech language pathologist training and their scope of practice and competence. We also gain understanding in typical development of speech and language, because that's important. We are always skewed by our frame of reference. And so if our goal is always what is typical, we really have to have a good understanding about what is typical. And so this is an area where I find that many of my trainees and supervisees have gotten stuck, because we see so much atypicality related to speech and language that we're not always clear what is typical development. And so having this rotation in typical speech language development helps enhance the BCBA or our new BCBA's understanding of that. For us internally, it's also a great way to build connection between our behavior analytic team and our speech language pathology team for some team building, and again, greater understanding of what each other brings to the table, and again, when to call on this person for support, and maybe when it's okay to try or do different things on our own. We also do a rotation on pharmacology. I did a postdoctoral master's in clinical psychopharmacology, and so I use some of that training to, again, not teach our apprentices or early career BCBAs to prescribe and to have an understanding about what biological impact might be occurring based on pharmacologic intervention. Also to understand and emphasize the importance of referrals to medical professionals to rule out issues before we ever try to intervene behaviorally, right? So ruling out, you know, going to neurology, making a referral to neurology to rule out seizure disorder, or ruling out diabetes, or ruling out allergies or ear infections or a host of other medical issues that really we must rule out first before attempting to change behavior. We also have some rotations that are book studies, so things like the Difficult Conversations book, which actually created a workbook. So if you're not here in Southeastern North Carolina and you can't participate in our wonderful training program, but it's something you want to improve, right, those soft skills or improve communication, I put together a self-study workbook that can be purchased in our Shopify store that complements that book and is part of what we use to guide that clinical rotation. Because again, communication skills are super important. Doesn't matter how much you know if people can't stand to be around you to get that information. And so I want to be sure that we're working on honing and strengthening those skills of ours so that we can get that science out to the individuals that we serve and their families and also our supervisees. Another rotation that we do is research. So to better understand research, that's an area that I found not all of my students are coming out of university with an understanding of application of, right? Pretty good at reading the literature, but not always coming up with your own research project. And so we do that. We spend a good chunk of time writing for medical necessity. This comes up because our new BCBAs often are writing in the same way that they wrote for university. And that is great in university, right? And results in A+ papers and getting good grades. But we always have to be thinking about who you're writing for. And when you're in practice, you're oftentimes not writing for another behavior analyst. You're writing for medical reviewers or parents or the educational system. And so there's a balance between including that really important technical information and writing it in a way so that the person who's reading it can actually consume and understand the information that you're sharing. Because only through accurate representation of what we're doing that's said in a way that can be understood and digested by the individual, can we really be sure that we've got informed consent to move forward? And so we spend a good amount of time working on clinical writing, writing for medical necessity, and also understanding insurance and what that looks like. Even if you're not going to own your own business, it's really important to understand, again, those different contingencies at play in your environment. You may not need to understand every piece of it, and to have a general understanding about billable versus non-billable hours, how much or how many billables are required as far as productivity and why, the different types of activities that are appropriate under the different CPT codes. Again, you don't have to have it all memorized or know it down to the last detail, and it is important to understand the different, again, contingencies that are at play in your position. And insurance is, for many of us, is a necessary evil, right? Or maybe not even an evil, but is important to understand, as that is who's funding our services. We also have an animal training rotation that we go through that we've got some great videos from some people that work with animals. My sister is also a veterinarian, and so she shares some animal behaviorism that she learned in her veterinary training program. We're working with some BCBAs that are using behavior analysis as a way to enhance physical performance or sports performance. Of course, you guys know we work with Shannon Biaggi to provide some OBM rotations for our apprentices. We also use the term apprentice for our specific stage of our training program, and then they move into residence. And that language of residency comes specifically from the medical training model, right? So once you get your basic training, then you go into residency where you're really specializing in what you're going to do. So in many ways for our gals and guys, it's working with individuals with ASD, related developmental disabilities, and then they move into what we call our early career BCBA, which is sort of through your first 1,000 hours practicing as a BCBA or longer. It's not just time limited. It's also created based on showing mastery in certain skill areas. So our training program, you know, we have got the students, then you move to an apprentice, then maybe you apply for and receive a full-time apprenticeship, and then you move into a residency, and then an early career BCBA. And there's support built into all of these different levels of training, and at these different levels of training, there's ongoing mentorship, whether it's weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and then also benefit is being able to participate in these clinical rotations where I've shared a little bit about kind of what those look like. So I appreciate you taking the time to join me here on the Business of Behavior podcast. As always, time is one of our most valuable resources, and I really appreciate those of you who choose to spend the time with me here. And I hope that if these podcasts are helpful, that you subscribe on iTunes, leave feedback, ratings. I really appreciate getting that feedback to help me know what is helpful and maybe what can be shaped up to be more helpful. This is part of my values, right, is to provide value, which is a lot of value, right? So one of my values is to be able to provide ongoing education and support to those who are newer in our field, knowing that our field is so new, and also knowing that I wouldn't be here without everybody who's poured into me. And so any suggestions or feedback are always welcome. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.